You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program for Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host, and today our guests are Kate Ryan, Blake Mamich, and Tony LaGarcia?
LaGrega,
okay. All right, you guys are on live, so let's go for it. The first question I'd like to ask each of you is to tell us a little bit about yourselves. We'll start with Kate, who's the executive director. And Blake, you'll be next, and then Tony.
Well, thanks so much for having us. Kate Ryan, I've been with the Colorado Water Trust for about 5 years, and I've been a water rights attorney since around 2006. And so in my private practice as an attorney, I worked for many years with private water users, municipalities, farmers, ranchers, industrial water users, to help them use water for whatever their needs were. And now with the Colorado Water Trust, I work with our project partners who are also water users to help them use their water for environmental purposes.
All right. And how about you, Blake?
Yeah, thanks again for having us. Blake Mamich, I'm a water resources specialist for the Colorado Water Trust. I've been with the Water Trust about 2 years. I do technical work, generally focusing on intake of potential projects and doing initial analysis for those projects and potential for stream flow restoration. Prior to being at the Water Trust, I was a water resources specialist for the Southern Ute Tribe down in southwest Colorado.
All right.
And that's where I am now. I live in Ignacio, and yeah.
Yeah, I've been down to the Southern Ute Res quite a bit, and a great place down there. Great country.
It is.
You know, your guys' website at www.coloradowatertrust.org says that Colorado's Water Trust vision is that every Colorado river and stream has water that supports our ecosystems. Did I say ecosystems or ecosystems? Sometimes it's ecosystems because we think we can handle Mother Nature, and she always has her last say, doesn't she? And what does this mean exactly? And how does your team help water rights owners restore water to rivers while protecting water rights and livelihoods?
Well, we started doing this work over 20 years ago. So back in 2001, there was a group of attorneys and water specialists who had been in this work just as I was for private clients. And they looked around and they saw there wasn't a ton of water in a lot of streams and rivers that they're personally interested in because they're beautiful places or they're areas where you want to go fishing. And they thought, well, why don't we do that for the rivers? We can go ahead and form a nonprofit that would do exactly that. And so our vision starting in 2001, or our mission rather, was let's go work with water users, people who have water rights that they own that they want to use in streams and rivers, rather than taking that water out of streams and rivers for their use. And so that mission has worked really well. We've got probably 22, depending how you count them up, projects in all different areas of Colorado. And over time, we've realized not only do we want to put that water back into rivers, but we work with people who are really invested in using water, whether it's for agriculture, whether they're a city like Fort Collins or Greeley. And they need to make sure that there's a balance, really, that we get water in the rivers at the right time to support fish and habitat. But we also want to make sure that our projects are supporting the communities all around those rivers.
That sounds like a pretty complicated job, actually. Tony, I think it's you that's worked in the Roaring Fork drainage before, and then Blake, I think, in the Crystal River drainage. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Who wants to go first and tell us about the work you did there?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about our work in the Crystal, and I guess I'd preface with I'm the steward of the project now, but a lot of good folks put in a ton of work prior to me becoming the steward of that project and set it up really well for me to do this work. But the Roaring Fork Conservancy put together a Crystal River management plan. And what that management plan did was identify a couple locations or several locations on the river that were had stream flow deficits and in parts of the irrigation season when the river is just real low, and it identified certain segments of the river. And then the Water Trust came in and did some concerted or concentrated kind of outreach in the area to identify some potential water rights holders who might want to help the river out. And one of those water rights holders is the Fales family, Bill and Marge Fales, and they decided to work on a project with us.
Yeah.
And what that project is what we call a water conservation program. And what that program allows us to do administratively is coordinate diversions with the Fales family when they're irrigating, and a certain set of parameters has to occur. So when the Crystal River hits critical flows, and we've identified those critical flows in that section of the river of 55 CFS, that activates our agreement.
Cubic feet per second, right?
Cubic feet per second. Okay. That's right. So when the river gets to that measurement, then our agreement is active. And once the river then drops to 40 CFS, that is when we can what we call coordinate diversions with the Fales family. And that's where we get together with the family and see if it's a good time for them to possibly reduce their diversions and leave some water in the river.
All right.
So we've been able to successfully do that in 2022. And it worked out really well. Something that Bill said to me that's really resonated is that at the time he made that decision because his barn was full, but his wallet was feeling a little light.
Right.
So we compensated him, and it created a win-win for the river and the landowner.
Right. Yeah. Bill's been on the show before if we were talking about wolves. So, but they're a great family. I'm glad to see that they're working with you.
Yeah.
All right. How about Tony now?
Yeah. So I have taken over again, like Blake. You know, this project was put together by people who preceded me at the Water Trust. But I took it over after some staff changeover. And this is a project, we use a similar tool to what we use on the Crystal. We use a water conservation program. And that is in partnership with the city of Aspen, and the program is sponsored by the Colorado River District, sort of approved by the Colorado River District. And again, similar to the Crystal, we have a project where we have some flow targets, and we're really eyeing specific times when the river is low and working on reducing diversions to improve the river. This involves the Wheeler Ditch, which is just upstream from Aspen near, I think it's the Ute Trailhead.
Right.
And that, the Wheeler Ditch, actually, it serves a lot of functions for the city of Aspen. But one of them is when you're walking on the pedestrian mall and there's that nice little ribbon of water flowing through the pedestrian mall, that is the Wheeler Ditch. So that stretch of the Roaring Fork is particularly challenged up there. You have transbasin diversions pulling out of the headwaters of the Roaring Fork, and we have several big diversions within the basin that pull a lot of water out of the river. And so that stream gets critically low often, and what we are able to do is when the river drops below 32 CFS, which is a number that the state has identified as sort of the minimum to preserve natural environment in the Roaring Fork. When the flow drops below 32 CFS, we complete this agreement with Aspen, and they have a 3 CFS water right, and they reduce their diversions from 3 CFS to 1 CFS. And generally, it'll remain like that throughout the remainder of the season. So we add 2 CFS back to the river that can really help in a stream that's flowing really low. That can be a pretty big difference and kind of help keeping it alive. So,
right. You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. Today our guests are Kate Ryan, Blake Mamich, and Tony LaGreca, right?
LaGreca.
LaGreca. I'm terrible with names, so thanks. Kate, one of your projects in the area was restoring water flows, I think it was to the Frying Pan River, to mitigate the formation of anchor ice. What the heck was that all about?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, I mentioned we've got about 22 projects across the state, and most of our projects aim to put water back into rivers when they're running low. And that typically happens in the summer. You know, you think about Colorado, we've got hopefully a big, beautiful snowpack. It starts to melt. Our rivers look pretty good. But then by the time end of July and August roll around, our rivers are starting to look a little bit too dry.
Right.
And so that's when most of our projects operate. And for quite some time, we've been working to lease water out of Rudai Reservoir on the Frying Pan River up above Basalt. And we've had summer leases that deliver water to the 15-mile reach of the Colorado River down near Grand Junction and Palisade, where there's endangered fish.
Right.
Yeah, so we'd been working with Rudai for quite some time, and we actually try to temper our releases out of Rudai. We don't want to put too much in the Frying Pan in the fall, because we don't want to blow out the fishery. But at the same time, we need to get water down to the endangered fish. So there's this balancing act. And so we'd been working with Rudai Reservoir Water for some time and had been in conversations with the Roaring Fork Conservancy, the Colorado River District, and the CWCB, which is the state agency that manages some water for endangered fish. And it came to our attention, speaking with, I think Rick LaFaro is coming on the show soon,
right.
And Heather Lewin. They said, you know, what we need more water in the Frying Pan in the winter. Because
right.
What happens is if there's not enough water coming out of Rudai Reservoir, you get water freezing in the river. There's not enough motion, enough water coming out to push that ice away. And if you get this anchor ice building up on rocks, it harms invertebrates in the Frying Pan. Those same invertebrates are the things that trout eat and that keep a river healthy. And so we had a bunch of relationships and with water right owners in Rudai Reservoir, and we said, hey, we can actually help out. We can enact some of those leases we have with water right owners from Rudai and help you guys to put more water in the Frying Pan in the winter. So real different. But because we could work with Roaring Fork Conservancy, especially in the River District, it was possible and helped out last winter.
All right. Yeah, Rick's going to be on the show next month, I believe it is. So we're looking forward to that.
That's great.
As Executive Director, let us know a little bit about some of your challenges that you have.
Oh, well, the first challenge is just the main challenge and why we even exist. So, you know, Colorado, Centennial State. There have been people coming and appropriating water rights out of rivers for well over 100 years. And in the 1970s, you know, there was a big environmental movement across the United States, and people started to realize we really need to protect some of the water in our rivers. And so that is the time at which Colorado got what we call an in-stream flow program, and that's the way our state protects water in rivers, is by getting water rights and using them for environmental purposes. But that happened in the 1970s, and people have been coming and appropriating water since the 1800s in Colorado. So by the time the environmental movement came around, there was very little water left for the environment. And so what we do is go out and work with the other water users, try to get some of our own water rights as well for environmental purposes. So the main problem is it's practically existential. We're just so late to the game trying to get any water for the environment.
Well, you know, life is about relationships and timing. So you build the relationships and people trust you, and then you can accomplish what needs to be accomplished. So
it is, yeah. And I think, you know, that's why we love to come somewhere like here and talk to people on the radio, is to share what we do and what those relationships are, because they build over time. We had I guess our first project in the Roaring Fork Valley was on Maroon Creek, working with a ditch called Stapleton Brothers.
Uh-huh.
And then we developed this relationship with the Fails and have an agreement with them, the agreement with the City of Aspen, and now this project on the frying pan as well. So it does. It definitely builds up over time.
Tony, what's one of your favorite things about your job?
Oh, well, just we're in town for a small retreat today, but I got to do one of my favorite parts about my job is stand on the banks of a river or in a river and do work. We were doing some training on how to measure stream flows today with some new equipment that we have that's new to some of our staff. And so I got to stand there on the Crystal River, look up at Mount Sopras, and listen to the sounds. The birds were starting to come out and start to see a few green things poking up out there. And the prettiest place you'll ever be in the state of Colorado is on a river, in my opinion, wherever that happens to be.
Right.
So I get to stand on the rivers, not as much as I'd like, but when I do, I'm doing it for good reasons.
All right. How about you, Blake?
Yeah, I really like some of the nerdy aspects of the job, diving into the water rights. I think that when you're learning about a specific set of water rights, you start to learn the history of an area, at least since settlement, and you can tie a lot into what you see around you as far as the economy of a place and just its story as a unique place in Colorado. So I really like the story that the water rights tell about the state.
If the rivers could talk, I'm sure the stories we'd hear then would be great, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So basically, lawyering up here is something you have to do occasionally, I guess. And I noticed on the website you have a lawyer, even though you're a lawyer too. So when does that kick in, when you need to have a lawyer work on a project? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure. I don't do as much legal work anymore, but I am still an attorney, and I am still in a couple active cases. In Colorado, when you have a senior water right, something that was appropriated pretty early, say in the early 1900s or something like that, you can change that water from one use to another use and maintain its senior priority date. And so that's what we're trying to do at the Water Trust, is get some of this senior water that it could be protected in the river, and sometimes it can be shared between multiple uses as well. So the guts of the work of a water attorney, whether you're a private attorney or whether you're an attorney for the Water Trust, are oftentimes going to water court with applications to change those uses. You know, I mean, as a state, we're always growing. People always need water to do new things that people become interested in. We hope that's environmental flows a lot of the time. People want to share with us. But every time we do that, we have to go to water court. And so we work all the time with our water laws in order to get the work done that we want to do at the Colorado Water Trust.
I've heard and read that some people are worried about losing their water rights if they don't use them. So that would be kind of hard to have to overcome, I would imagine.
It's really important, right? It's people's livelihoods.
Right.
Nobody wants to use their water right. And so actually something that's happened over time is that we have new laws that enable water right owners to share their water with an environmental organization or the Colorado Water Conservation Board to have that water used for environmental purposes or in-stream flow. And while their water is being shared, their water rights are protected from loss under Colorado law. So they can do things like lease their water rights to the Water Trust for 5 out of 10 years, or do different water conservation programs like we have with the City of Aspen, and that actually protects their water use.
Okay. A friend of mine is Alan Best, who writes a column called Big Pivots, and he did an article back in November last year about all the conservation measures people are doing, even towns and cities, about trying to get people to not have Kentucky bluegrass, for instance. And that was quite amazing in itself, that whole story, and how people are just now kind of coming into that's the thing to do, whereas before it hasn't always been. What measures do you encourage water users to use that are conservation measures? Do you encourage your people you deal with to do similar things with their water rights?
We don't. You know, we pretty much stick in our lane and work on the projects that we have with water right owners okay. to get their water back into streams and rivers. We're just a staff of seven. But it is pretty great. One of the things that we get to see working with the Colorado River District and other water stakeholders all over the state is to find out what others are doing. And there's just a ton of creativity around water use. And it used to be that only water lawyers and engineers, I feel like, knew deeply what was going on. But people are getting more and more interested in backyard conservation measures and right. seeing what they can do, which is that's a pretty great part of this job.
For sure. Basically, what people I don't think understand a lot about in-stream flows. So who wants to tackle that one and tell a little bit about in-stream flows?
I guess I'll jump in there. Kate alluded to the laws in the developed in the 70s to develop an in-stream flow program for the state, and there's two ways the state can have. State is the only entity that can have in-stream flows and use in-stream flows, and there's two ways they can go about it. They can either appropriate a new in-stream flow, which is go into court like any other water user and say, hey, I want to build a new ditch here and irrigate this field, except for this is the state saying, hey, we feel like there's a minimum amount of water that science tells us there's a minimum amount of water that this stream should have to support a healthy environment. And so the state can actually appropriate a new water right for that stream. And that's, they do that. There's, you know, five or six handful of new appropriations every year. There's a map of them, and they're all over the state. And those water rights are generally in the terms of a CFS, you know, 10 CFS, 15, 3, depending on the size of the stream. And that sort of provides that base level of protection to a stream. However, you know, because they're such a junior appropriation, the ones that are going to get appropriated this year are 2024. Then when on that river, there may be an 1863 water right. So the likelihood of the state being able to really ensure that water stays in the river is pretty low. So the other way they can meet an in-stream flow need is with an appropriation, which is what our organization does, which is either, you know, through a lease or a purchase and a temporary sharing of water, you know, focused on that in-stream flow. And the idea behind the in-stream flow is it's just kind of the minimum amount that, say, a fish would need to be able to swim up and down the river without being impeded by low flows. So keeping it wet kind of in one continuous chain.
What's the most rewarding thing you've done recently, Kate, that's really, really pulled your chain?
Ooh. Well, we haven't done it yet, but we have an event tomorrow at the Takah, and we're going to have a water panel. There's going to be a bunch of panelists. Aspen Journalism is moderating. There's going to be Andy Mueller from the River District and Mark Harris who used to be with Great Valley Water Users Association, Hattie Johnson with American Rivers. And I love speaking with crowds about what we do and getting their questions too. Like, what do people want to know about how can I make a difference or how are our rivers doing? It's really hard for me even. I live and breathe this work. But you go out on a day like today and you look at the crystal and is it healthy? Is it a lot of water or not a lot for the river? It's really hard to tell. So these conversations where we're just sharing what we dream for our rivers, I think, are really special.
Takah is a great place to have an event of any kind. It's just they have a lot of good events there.
Oh, good. I haven't been there before. So.
Oh, good. It's fairly new. It's just the last few years. It was the temporary for a while. Now it's the Takah.
Yeah.
We can segue right into what you were saying about people wondering about what they can do. So how about telling people what they can do to help in the last few minutes we have to help you out and help the rivers out?
Yeah. Well, I think becoming informed, you know, looking on the Colorado Water Trust website, joining our newsletter so that you get a good handle on what's going on. There's lots of great newsletters and blogs out there, too. Coyote Gulch is really interesting. You mentioned your friend Alan Best. There's a lot of information out there. And I think, frankly, I think being able to support local organizations, pick a favorite local organization, whether it's, you know, a Roaring Fork Conservancy or something doing work in your backyard, and then maybe a statewide organization and supporting their work. In Colorado, it's kind of funny. I mean, for the water, if we're going to use water rights, we do have to pay for them. And so, you know, not shelling out big dollars, but being able to contribute to that and know that you are part of acquiring water for the things you're interested in, fishing, keeping the environment healthy. It's just the way it works in Colorado. So
right.
It's kind of embarrassing to say that, but it is what we organizations
have, yeah,
need.
We have kind of unique water rights, don't we, in Colorado from other states, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, your community really stood up too, I think, in passing the mill levy that Colorado River District uses to fund projects within the basin here. That's people, you know, speaking with their vote as well as with their wallet, which is awfully important.
For sure. Quickly, what's your next project coming up that people might be interested in?
Oh. We got approval for a new project on Tamichi Creek, which might run this summer. We always look really carefully to see if that creek needs water, and if it does, we'll run that project hopefully this summer. And we have a new project in northwestern Colorado, a place called Slater Creek. So more and more people are signing up and interested in sharing their water for the environment, but also keeping it in agricultural production at the same time.
Which is important.
Yeah, it is.
Because so much land is taken out of agricultural use in Colorado.
Yeah, it's important for communities, and it's important for the environment, too.
All right. So where are you going next? You're here in Carbondale. Where are you headed next?
White House Pizza.
All right. All right. Well, I hope that the call event is successful. So tell us one more time when it's going to be, and is the public invited to it?
Yes, I believe it may actually be sold out or nearly so. It was free tickets, but you've got to sign up to get one. So if you're interested in going, you could try just Googling Aspen Journalism Colorado Water Trust. That'll get you there.
All right.
And if it is sold out and people are interested, we'll come back.
All right. Yeah, it happens a lot with the call. Things get sold out pretty fast if you don't get your tickets. I have a friend that's going to be appearing the next month, and I went ahead and got some tickets early because you never know when you're not going to be able to get one. So,
wow.
What are some parting thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
I would say just, you know, it's a real pleasure to be here in the Roaring Fork Valley. And it's a real pleasure to work here. We have some of our oldest projects are here in this valley, and there's so many interesting and good things that happen here. But there's also so many rivers that are, you know, in being challenged and have flow issues. So I'd say, you know, get involved, do what you can to help the rivers of the Roaring Fork stay healthy and happy and become more healthy and happy.
All right. Healthy and happy rivers. I like that. Well, we're about ready to stop here, and so I'd like to let people know that you've been listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program for Land's Sake. Join us again every second Monday of the month, and on May show, Rick LaFaro of the Roaring Fork Conservancy will be here. And until then, whatever you do, do it to Mother Nature for Land's Sake.